Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, along with a special guest today. That is Steve Pavlik, known to more of our listeners, Steve from Potomac, Maryland. Steve, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me back, Jim.
Yes, this is not your initial appearance on the show. You told me when we spoke earlier this week, it's been 2 years since you've been on.
It has. And it's interesting how there are a lot of similarities, because I think the last time I came on, there was a lot of hype around a new offensive coordinator in Yurcich. Obviously, that didn't really materialize. And we have a new offensive coordinator coming in. There's also concerns about the quarterback that was returning at the time in Sean Clifford. We have questions about Drew Aller. So it's interesting how history may not repeat itself, but in this case, it appears to be rhyming.
It does. And of course, it was in the summer. You're a fill-in for T. Frank this week. Don't worry, T. Frank has not gone away. Well, he's gone away maybe just for a week, though. That is it. Steve's filling in. Steve is filling in as the Penn State fan, okay? Steve's not a member of the media. He is a fan. First of all, just so our listeners are caught up, Steve, explain to them why you are a Penn State fan.
Well, I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. My father's from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and grew up a Penn State fan. My uncle went to Penn State. Both my sisters went to Penn State. As a young aspiring linebacker, I wanted to play at Penn State. Now, if you saw me, I'm not very big. And if you definitely saw me play, I'm not very fast. So I don't blame Coach Paterno for not wanting me to play. But, you know, there was a story when I believe in seventh grade, there was a top quarterback in the same youth program for me a few years older, Tim Strachan. And he was one of the top ranked quarterbacks in the country. I believe he was top five. And some other quarterbacks in that class were Peyton Manning and Donovan McNabb, to give you sort of the status of where he was at the time. He had committed to come to Penn State, and he had, unfortunately, a very bad accident that summer at the beach that left him paralyzed. And Coach Paterno called him a few weeks after that accident and asked him if he was still coming to Penn State. And Tim explained that he, you know, about the accident, thought maybe Coach Paterno hadn't known about that. Coach Paterno said, "No, Tim, I'm aware of that. You know, I'm a man of my word. You're still coming here on a full football scholarship." And, you know, I was already trending in the Penn State fandom at that point, but that really left a big mark on me and many people down here in the D.C. area.
Wow, that's a pretty cool story. I was going to ask if Joe wanted to make him a linebacker.
Well, Tim probably could have. I still keep in touch with him to this day. But he's actually been to Penn State. He married a Penn State girl. So the story has a happy ending. He went on to do very well, graduated from Georgetown Law School, and is a successful lobbyist here in the D.C. area.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is a great story. And it's a typical Joe Paterno Penn State story. And we'll kind of get into that a little bit, Steve. But I brought you on because I wanted to go over some of the things going on at Penn State, with Penn State football specifically, and also the rest of college football. Sometimes, and I always present myself as the Penn State fan in doing this. I don't know if after about 8 years of doing this, if I'm officially a media guy now, as opposed to, you know, the Penn State fan. And I suppose doing what I do, it does influence my outlook on things, maybe changes it a bit. But that's why I wanted someone who is a Penn State fan. I know you're a dedicated, hardcore Penn State fan, and I just wanted to get the feel for your take on a lot of these things that are going on. And let's start with this. Maybe the biggest Penn State football story of the offseason is the new stadium renovations. Pretty big deal when you're going to put out $700 million for a renovation, Steve. And I know you're also a fiscally responsible guy. You're down in D.C. and you fight that fight all the time. As a fan, though, what is your reaction to this, the announcement of the new stadium renovation? Are you excited about it? As a fan, you're saying, boy, I can't wait for this. What's your reaction?
Well, just quickly, maybe the only fiscally responsible person here in D.C. when you look at our lawmakers. But in terms of the new stadium, I honestly am indifferent. You know, I seems to me that they sort of ended up at a decision and they're sort of backing in the analysis to support their preferred decision and making the renovation. I mean, my instinct says if you're going to do it right. Go ahead and just build a new one and hope it'll last. But that's going to be where it's going. I do acknowledge that the stadium did need some renovations. But, you know, as a season ticket holder from 2005 until 2021, when I started adding to my headcount now with two boys under two, I'm more concerned about, you know, what is this going to mean for my experience, particularly the traffic, but also just being able to get in and out of the stadium, candidly.
That's an interesting take. And I've talked to people who say, hey, what's wrong with the experience right now? They get over 100,000 people, but also there's been no doubt there are things that need to be done with the infrastructure, the plumbing and that type of thing, especially if they're going to hopefully someday host a playoff game in December, you know, so there were changes that needed to be made. But I question, not that changes will be bad. I'm excited to see what they're going to do, but I think that's one of my concerns is just what are they going to do? I'm not sure they really told us.
No, they haven't. And I think one of the things that makes Penn State special is the student section, the large number of students. And I hope they don't do anything to shrink that size, because somebody who is now 20 years beyond being a student, you know, you feed off that energy. That's what makes it a special game day atmosphere. And I hope, again, they don't go too far in that direction to try to attract money and, you know, these bigger donors, so to speak, at the expense of the students, and as well as people that want to travel to the stadium, you know, that have to be economically sensitive. You know, there are a lot of passionate fans there, and I think striking the right balance is important. And go back to that student experience. I mean, these are going to be your future donors. And if you look back, when I talk to my sisters, a lot of their best times at Penn State, when they reminisce with their friends, were at those games. These are going to be your future donors. And so if you can leave that mark on these people, don't be penny wise and pound foolish. And again, just from a competitive atmosphere, that ground stakes when the student section really gets going. I know we can talk maybe about no longer playing these whiteout games, dealing with Fox and the Big Noon situation. That's another topic. But again, embrace what makes it special. Don't run away from it. I guess that's sort of my advice to anybody out there who may be listening in a position to do something about this.
Well, I talked to some folks on the Board of Trustees who, and this was quite a while ago before they made any announcements, that the one of their goals was to keep it over 100,000 people, make it so that it's affordable to the common man, that you could still get there. And I think they're trying to thread that needle with keeping the capacity at a level where there's enough supply to get people there, but also can we put out there premium things, premium seating, suites, that type of thing to draw in the big money, Steve?
Well, it's like anything else, finding that right balance. I mean, having been through so many of these seasons at Penn State, I mean, I always remind when they talk about expanding the capacity, it seems to me that something that maybe sat 12 people comfortably, then they sort of expanded to sit 14 people uncomfortably on those bleachers. I'm all in favor of having sort of my territory sort of set aside there from an in-day game experience. But again, I think to your point, it's sort of being able to strike that balance, and talking about it and being able to do it are two different things. And I'm sure part of this may bleed into NIL when getting this corporate sponsorship. If you're going to try to attract corporate donors and big donors, they're going to want certain things. And my guess is the Board of Trustees administration has to be sensitive to that.
Well, it's interesting. And you're right. You already hit on a couple of things that I will be bringing up with you, like the whiteout and the NIL. And it's about what does that game day experience feel like? We already know a lot of people nationally going to whiteout, for example, is a bucket list item for them. You know, the experience is fantastic, but I've always said it's not the structure that makes the atmosphere. It's the fans. And you put it in a good way that it's the students who lead the way. They're the ones who make it so intense, so much fun, and they lead and the rest of the crowd just follows, Steve.
Absolutely. That's where the energy comes from. That's what makes the atmosphere. If you take that away or do anything to diminish that, I just really worry about what that on-field product is going to look like from not only a marketability, but again, from a competitive advantage standpoint. I mean, I just remember being at that game in Michigan was forced to call a timeout on their first play. I mean, there's nothing else that can compete with that. And I've been to a lot of different college football stadiums. I've been to LSU for a night game. I've been to Alabama, Auburn, many other stadiums there in the Big Ten, whether it's Ohio State, Maryland and the like, and there is no other competitive atmosphere like there is at a whiteout at Penn State. I can honestly say that, and I've been around to see it.
I've been at a couple other venues also, and I agree. How's this for a question? What's the second best venue?
LSU at night was, in my opinion, a pretty good venue, at least from the college atmosphere. Maybe we'll talk about this later, too. I don't particularly like the NFL atmosphere. And my concern is that college football should be really, I think, focused more on embracing what makes it special and unique, as opposed to trying to emulate the NFL experience.
Yeah, that's a great point. It is. And I'm sure you've been to NFL games, and the feel is entirely different as opposed to a college atmosphere. And I'll be honest, in the other places that I've gone, there's been some great venues where with great atmosphere. I've been to Madison to watch a game at Wisconsin. When Penn State went down to Auburn, I went down there. And I got to tell you, it was a great game day experience. Much different than my experience when I've gone to an NFL game.
I would agree. I mean, one of the challenges I have with going to the NFL game is people are constantly buying beer. And I enjoy beer as much as the next guy, maybe more than the next guy. But at the game day situation there in the NFL, I'm constantly having to get out of my seat to let people either go to the beer or go to the bathroom. And I don't appreciate that. And again, as a father of two young boys, I'm sensitive to my surroundings now with where that level of drinking leads to during the game day experience. Student section is what it is. I'm all for embracing that and them getting a little loose, so to speak, prior to the game and increase that volume. But again, for that atmosphere, for people sitting in the surrounding stands, I really hope it doesn't deteriorate to what I experience at the NFL level.
Well, see, I lived for many years in Philadelphia. So that's where I saw professional sports. And as you were describing the downside to professional sports, in my head, you were talking about Philadelphia. And if anyone could remember going to Old Veterans Stadium, whether it was football or baseball, you could appreciate what Steve was describing. All right, that is it for quarter number one. We've got lots more to talk about with Steve when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. I'm with my special guest, Steve from Potomac. You know him from sending in his great questions. And Steve and I were just chatting a little bit between segments, and it's funny. I'm the guy who's over 60 years old, okay? Steve, you just told me you're 42, and you told me with the game day atmosphere, they're playing too much of that loud hippie music, right? They ought to be doing more with the band.
I just go back to what we were just talking about in terms of the NFL experience. I mean, embrace what makes the college game college. That's the band, the blue band. Probably more of those people that are in that blue band than on the football team. I mean, they come out, there are a lot of them walking through there, and they are, their experience is going to be important in terms of what that lasting memory is of Penn State. When I think about going to those games, particularly in 2005, and feeding off the energy from the band, when they really got going, to me, that was a more exciting environment And I maybe remember that more fondly for a number of reasons. That was a great season, obviously. But, you know, now it seems we don't really hear as much from the band. It's a lot of music blasting through. I mean, some people like the music, some people don't. I've heard arguments that maybe the players like it to pump them up. I mean, look, you're playing big time college football. You shouldn't need music at that point to pump you up to go out there and play. So again, anything they can do to, I would say, embrace the college atmosphere, including things like the band, to me, is better in terms of differentiating yourself from the NFL product.
Well, I'm with you. I do like having the band more involved. And I do think it's interesting now working with Landon so much. I do get the player's perspective. And yes, there are things that they like. But to your point in our first segment, there's a balance to these things. And you don't have to eliminate one totally, but I think they should keep the band, especially those are the college students. They're the ones who've worked hard to prepare themselves. And I do think a lot of the fans would appreciate that. Let's move on to another topic. You touched on it a little bit, is, and every year now it seems to be part of the discussion, is which game for the whiteout. And just the background, now that Fox is the primary carrier of Big Ten football, and Fox has determined that their biggest games will go on at noon, and Penn State has always wanted their biggest game to be the whiteout. So for many years, it just alternated between Michigan and Ohio State. I guess the first question is, Steve, as a fan who's experienced the whiteout games, does it have to be a night game, or should it be a night game?
Yes, that's not really open to debate. I mean, it's the experience. You talk about people maybe, again, getting a little loose before the game, all for that and for the rowdy atmosphere that it contributes to. But it's that contrast with the night and sort of the whiteout and the lights and the fireworks. You can't replicate that at noon. I mean, I'm sorry. And I know that Fox was trying to look for marketing opportunity. I'm sure they're making a lot of money off these noon games and trying to then compete with ABC. At this point, now that we've sort of seen the conferences going their respective ways, with the SEC going towards ABC and ESPN and Big Ten moving towards Fox and the partnership there, I think they can compete, particularly with that whiteout environment with ABC. That shouldn't be an impediment to doing it. I think they should embrace it.
Well, I'm with you, but I also think, and regular listeners of our show may be tired of me saying this, but the conference has for years and years and years made special accommodations for Michigan, Ohio State.
Right. Every time it's at noon. Why don't you do the same thing for Penn State? And it seems like Pat Kraft is somebody who's willing to fight for that. And honestly, I'll say this. I think he's a welcome addition. I thought Sandy Barber was a terrible pick for athletic director. I thought she was a complete overreaction to the Sandusky situation. And I'm more optimistic now that we seem to have somebody there in Kraft who's willing to recognize what needs to be done. I wish him well in his future success here.
Steve, don't hold back. How do you really feel about the athletic directors?
Well, again, Barber was just a complete overreaction. I thought she did a horrific job. I'm glad to see somebody that gets the importance of football, that gets the position that Penn State is. I mean, Penn State has always been treated poorly ever since it entered the conference. You go back to 94 when you had a lot of other athletic directors from the other Big Ten institutions not supporting them for the national championship. You could point to any number of things during the 11 and 12 seasons, the way they were treated. My hope maybe now is with, you know, more of these teams coming in, particularly big brands, you know, like USC and Oregon, that maybe that, you know, duopoly we've had there with Ohio State and Michigan, maybe that gets diminished somewhat moving forward. I'll believe it when I see it, but at a minimum, the whiteout is good for not only Penn State, it's good for Big Ten, it's good for Fox. To me, this is a no-brainer.
I'm with you, and I agree. I like that Pat Kraft has been quoted as saying, hey, it's something that's worth fighting for. But the thing about it, too, is if Fox is dead set on they're going to play their big game at noon, and that gives them the competitive advantage, God bless you, that's fine. But I think it's up to the conference to just say, the whiteout's going to be a night game. We're going to set up the schedule so there's at least a, you know, it doesn't have to be Michigan or Ohio State. It could be USC. It could be Oregon. You know, it could be teams like that where it's a big game. We are going to schedule those against Penn State in October, and it's going to be a night game. So Fox, just like ESPN and ABC had to deal with a noon game for Michigan, Ohio State, you got to deal with Fox. You either adjust, broadcast it as a night game, or the game goes to NBC, who I would think would love to be associated with the whiteout.
I think so. I'd be surprised if you really saw a drop-off in the ratings, honestly. The other thing I'll say about playing some of these West Coast teams at night, maybe you're off better off playing them at noon, actually, with that body clock situation. I know that's a real thing for them. So maybe if you ask Coach Franklin, he might actually prefer to play Oregon and USC at noon. But for the others, my guess is he would prefer an evening game as well.
Yeah, you can't. I think the atmosphere is worth so much. And it's, look, this is still entertainment. And like I said, if you're NBC, I think you want to be the whiteout network. You know, every year we get the whiteout game and it's a huge game. And if Fox doesn't, you know, want to broadcast the game at night, so be it. So I am with you also. It's got to be a night game. I can't. Ohio State this year, if they play it at noon, it will still have a lot of juice just because it's Ohio State. You don't have to worry about getting the fans up for that game. But a whiteout atmosphere has to be at night. So anyway, we hit whiteout. You mentioned one other thing that has really changed the game, and it's interesting, fan reaction to NIL, which has really, really changed the game. I guess my first question for you, Steve, as a fan, because I've seen this reaction from a lot of people, has NIL spoiled the game for you? Has it changed the game, the nature of the game so much that you have a negative reaction to it?
I don't think it's positive, but I mean, I'm not sure what I can do at this point to address it. I think it was a combination of two things. It was a combination of NIL and the transfer portal. And I think the fact that they both coincided at the same time, just you think about Penn State being loyal. That's obviously something dating back to the Paterno era that's really, I think, distinguished Penn State from other programs. And I'll give Coach Franklin actually credit. You know, I've had a lot of criticism of him from a lot of my questions that some listeners may recall. But yeah, I think for a large part, he's largely tried to adhere to that and attract people that want to be at the school and play for him. But with NIL, to me, that's a moving target. I don't have a lot of faith for a lot of the people here in D.C. with respect to Congress, but I think at some point they're going to be forced to step in and maybe level the playing field here somewhat. But this Wild West situation that we're currently in, I just don't think it's sustainable. I just wonder, too, from a donor fatigue perspective, not unique to Penn State, but look, we're talking about shelling out money for the new stadium. It costs more money for these season tickets. Now you have to contribute to NIL. It's a lot of money, and it's not unreasonable to start to question, well, where's my return on investment? Now, maybe I'll shift to some of my criticism of Franklin. Look, 10 years now, you know, I think it's reasonable for people to question, okay, what am I shelling out for? What am I getting in return? And just add that to the list. Again, I think that may be a situation where maybe Penn State's situation is a little different than some others.
It is. The interesting thing with NIL, and we'll dive a little bit deeper into this, is the comparison is always with Ohio State. And I get it. You know, it's you not only in the same conference, but for years now, you've been in the same division. You had to play Ohio State every year. And to get to that next level, you had to beat Ohio State, and you couldn't. So that's part of it. And when you see this past year where Ohio State has gone all in on NIL, it's as Penn Staters, it's like, well, why can't we compete with that? And the same people who say, why can't we compete with that? Are the same people who are saying, well, don't come to me for the money. And I get that too, the donor fatigue. My take is that the majority of schools are closer to the Penn State fan reaction than the Ohio State reaction. I think more schools are struggling with NIL than are thriving with it.
I think that's probably fair. Again, I think there are two things that are unique to Penn State in that, one, we talked about Franklin 10 years questioning return on investment. You also, going back to earlier segment, Sandy Barber and just the reaction to how Coach Paterno was very poorly treated. I think there are a lot of donors and people of that era that still aren't happy with that. And I think those are two things that are unique to Penn State that may be making their NIL situation maybe a little worse. But I think you're probably correct that they're the haves and have nots. I think Penn State probably a little closer to haves than many of the have-nots there. And that, you know, that experience is similar to this, but we're being judged against the haves. I think that's where Penn State wants to be. So that's the competitive playing field right now. And that's an area where Penn State needs to make improvement.
They do. And where that translates into not just the portal, where we see teams like Ohio State, Ole Miss thriving with the portal, bringing in a lot of players, and no doubt at all, that's about money. It is.
It doesn't always mean results, though. I do want to question that. I mean, look at Texas A&M. I mean, they're a classic example of, you know, really no restrictions when it comes to the financial side, but their on-field product was atrocious despite that. So, I mean, think people need to be cautious and manage their expectations. Simply throwing at the money at the problem isn't going to guarantee results. I mean, I can speak to countless examples of that going on here in Washington, D.C., but that's probably for a different podcast for a different day.
Yeah, I was just going to say, gee, in D.C., isn't that the way they solve every problem? But you're right, it's not. And it's interesting because I was just having a conversation with someone about Oregon and Phil Knight. There was an article that came out how Phil Knight isn't getting any younger. He wants a national championship, and so money is no object. But what you have with Oregon is good program putting out a lot of money, as opposed to a school that isn't necessarily that kind of program. We're going to pick up that conversation when we come back in quarter three.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Steve. I'm Jim. We're talking all things Penn State and doing it from a little different perspective. Steve and I are both fans of the program. Obviously, we're Penn Staters, or at least Penn State fans, rooting for the football team to succeed. And with the changing landscape of college football, things are different and different fan bases of the different schools are reacting differently. We've seen Ohio State throw a lot of money at the transfer portal. Meanwhile, they also recruit like crazy. Oregon was another story we were talking about, them being in the same boat. But you rightfully brought up, Steve, Texas A&M, Miami. There's a lot of schools, and I look at a lot of the schools in the Southeast Conference that there's probably 8, maybe even 10 schools that think, 12-team playoff, we belong in the playoffs. Well, guess what? They're not all going to make it. And I wonder what the repercussions are going to be for those teams that, like Texas A&M, like Florida, maybe Missouri. Ole Miss threw a lot of money at it. I think we expect them to play well this year, but an extra loss or so, and they don't make the playoffs, what's going to be the reaction of their fan base? But, Steve, that also brings up this whole – the landscape has changed now. It's a different Big Ten. It's a different Southeast Conference. And it's even changed the national landscape because if you're not in one of those two conferences, it's now a Big Two. So I guess my question I'm leading up to is it good for college football? You as a fan, are you more interested now that – we're going to see some different teams like Washington and Oregon and USC. What is your reaction to all the changes and realignment?
Similar to NIL, I mean, there's only I don't know how productive it is to get all worked up over something you really don't have that much control over.
Steve, we're fans. That's what we do. We get worked up about things we have no control over.
I mean, to me, it seems, going back to an earlier point, is this just college football moving in the direction of the NFL? Are we going to reach a point where there's basically two conferences just like the NFL, and you're going to have sort of a Big Ten, probably expand even more And you get to the point where they're going to play their end playoff to play the eventual winner of the SEC. I mean, at this point, that seems to be the direction this is headed. Maybe through some additional expansion, we sort of get back to regional rivalries, because the conference is going to be so big that you're going to end up playing closer from a proximity standpoint, schools. And I don't know, that would be a bad thing, that you could actually travel to more away games to see your team play. In terms of seeing some new teams come in, as opposed to a lot of the same old, same olds, I think that's exciting. I mean, one of the games I remember pretty fondly is 2008, when Oregon State actually came to Penn State. Hadn't seen them play before. That was sort of interesting to watch. And if I recall correctly, it was either the week after, or maybe 2 weeks after, that team actually went on to beat USC. So it just shows you that, you know, sometimes this contrast in styles can make for some interesting matchups. So, you know, yeah, I'm excited to see some of the bigger teams come in. I think we're all looking forward to a rematch with USC after what happened in the Rose Bowl in 2016. I remember going out there too for the Rose Bowl and after that 2008 season that didn't end very well for Penn State. But, you know, bringing in Oregon, I mean, Penn State's very lucky this year that they're not playing them, candidly. And does that sort of, where does that mean for Penn State in this pecking order? I mean, to add powerful programs, Oregon, USC, what's that going to be the expectations in terms of the playoffs? You know, I mean, we've been sort of pitched, you know, over the years that Penn State was on the cusp of making the 14 playoff. When you expand it to 12, one, making the playoff now no longer seems to be as big of an accomplishment, in my opinion, as compared to four. I think there's probably more, I would say, risk rather than reward from Franklin's perspective, because at this point, you know, if you don't make the 12-team playoff, your season is going to be a failure, not just for Penn State, some of those other SEC programs that you mentioned. And then what does that mean in terms of the drying up potentially of the dollars to try to sustain this thing? And Penn State's schedule this year, I think, is relatively favorable. They don't have to play Michigan. They don't have to play Oregon. Next year is going to be much more difficult. And you're also talking about potentially doing that without Aller, without Singleton, Allen. You know, so if you're for Penn State, you better hope that you make that playoff this year.
Well, you kind of jumped ahead to a topic that I did want to go over with you. So let's jump into it. So my question was going to be, does Franklin have to make the playoffs this year? I don't think he'll get fired if he doesn't make the playoffs.
The hot seat will get hotter, and you got to look at the buyout.
Yes, that's the question. So a lot of folks, in fact, there was a recent article that came out that generated lots of conversation. I saw it in many areas where it talked about what does each team need to do to not make the playoffs, but be in the conversation for the playoffs. A lot of people looked at it and just said, oh, what they need to do to make the playoffs. And Penn State was under the two-loss list. If they go 10-2, well, I think they've got to go minimum 10-2 to make the playoffs. But 10-2 does not guarantee the playoffs.
No, it doesn't. And I think maybe under that scenario, it's going to depend on who those losses are against and how competitive they are. I mean, that's sort of the frustration the last few seasons, just not being competitive against Michigan and Ohio State, particularly at home. And somebody driving up for the D.C. area to spend 7 hours on the road, 3.5 hours up, 3.5 hours back, to see that, that's tough. That's a long ride home after that experience. And you have to remember, too, that Penn State's opening up at West Virginia. Penn State has three new coordinators this year. That's a lot of change very early on that's going to be in a hostile environment. I mean, West Virginia played Penn State pretty close last year. I know Penn State sort of pulled away there. So you can't really get caught looking ahead there, because at that point, if you lose that game, you're going to have a tough game against Ohio State. And not sure how USC is going to go. And, you know, I at more than two losses would be devastating and a disappointment following a season that, candidly, last year there was a lot of hope that turned out to be, I think, more hype. So managing those fans' expectations this year is going to be really important.
Well, there's also the situation, you alluded to it, that after this year, Aller's gone, Singleton, Allen, Abdul Carter, Denai Dennis Sutton, a lot of players are going to be gone, the stars. And Penn State, it's not like Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, where they reload. So is this a window of opportunity? They didn't get through last year when they had the opportunity. You brought up a good point. I'm wondering, after this year, does that window close for a while where we'll have to be a rebuild?
I agree completely. I mean, if you don't make the playoff this year, again, that hot seat's only going to get hotter, because how many years are you not going to make the playoff now that it's expanded to 12 and again, diminished in terms of its significance compared to where it was at with four teams? I just wonder what that means for Franklin and, you know, what that, again, that hot seat getting hotter if he doesn't make it this year. Because again, 2 or 3 years trying to figure out and rebuild, patience is starting to wear thin.
It is. And you and I have had a lot of discussions about James Franklin, and I've taken the other side. I know you've been very critical of him over the years. Does the fact that, and this is one of the things that I point out in defense of James Franklin, and I can understand if someone says, well, that's the problem. He does not recruit in the same neighborhood as Ohio State, okay? So just like, and maybe this gap is unfair to say it, like, if are you critical of the Rutgers coach for Rutgers losing to Penn State? Well, there's a talent gap there. There's a pretty steep talent gap between Penn State and Ohio State if you look at the recruit rankings. And I have these numbers in front of me, Steve, just because it came up in a show just earlier this week when we were talking about Oregon and how they're doing on the recruiting trail with, you know, Phil Knight's money, Nike money. And I pointed out, instead of using, you know, 5 stars versus 4 star versus 3 star as my comparison, I use top 100, top 200, top 300 as a better way. Because 5 stars, there's like 35 stars a year. There's like 300 or 400 4 stars. So there's a huge gap. So I use top 100. Penn State has, in this upcoming recruiting class, when everybody was thrilled about what they did in June, they have only one top 100 player in this recruiting class. And he's like number 96, something like that. Counting that player, they have a total of 3 top 200 players. 3. Oregon has 4 top 100 and 9 top 200. And just to go one step further before I let you react to this, Ohio State, Penn State has 3 top 20 players. Ohio State has 3 of the top 6 recruits in the country. They have a total of 14 top 200 players and 10 top 100 players. There is a talent gap there.
I guess the way I would respond to that is I look back at 16, 17, and 18. 16, obviously, Penn State was able to beat Ohio State, I would say, under very fluky circumstances. 17, 18, Penn State should have won those games. Had Penn State beaten Ohio State 3 years in a row, as they probably should have, I don't think this talent gap would be as wide as it is. I mean, just common sense would tell you it's a lot harder to run up a mountain twice than it is to get up the first time. So I think that's sort of point one. Point two, recognizing the talent gap, that's fine maybe with Ohio State, but I look at some of the games where there's, I would call, more of a balanced playing field. Michigan hasn't really recruited recently ahead of Penn State. They've more been on par, but the on-field comparison hasn't been very close. You look at what happened against Ole Miss in the bowl game. I know that there were a lot of Penn State players sitting out during that, but look, that is a team where you shouldn't really, in my opinion, have that big of a disparity against. You go back to another bowl performance to get Arkansas. It just goes back to, if Penn State doesn't have a clear talent advantage, anytime they play teams of comparable talent, it comes down to coaching. And based on the decisions that I see as a fan in terms of being schematically prepared that week, a lack of in-game adjustments, and I'm not even going to mention the timeouts because I think that's candidly a little overrated. I just don't have any confidence to be able to win those. I think that's what you have to do, is you have to start beating the teams you're competing at more on par in terms of your talent level, and that's how you're going to attract more talent to get there. That's how you have to do it. Clemson and Dabo Sweeney, they had some great quarterbacks, and they were able to use that and successfully sort of build a program and a culture. I think that's more the model that Penn State needs to do, not necessarily saying that you have to get Dabo. I don't think he would leave, but I think that's, you know, you're looking at a blueprint of how to build a program and a template. That's something I would borrow from. And that goes back to the quarterback. You need to, there's some questionable decisions as to who he's played at quarterback, and this idea that you need to have a real running threat. And a lot of people look at the decision to not play Will Levis, not play Tommy Stevens as much. And right now you have Drew Aller. I hope Drew works out. He's not a real running threat. And we'll see how that again, you know, plays out this season.
All right. Very good. That's the end of quarter number three. I will react to those comments when we get back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. I'm Jim, he's Steve. We were talking about Penn State from a fan perspective, and we talked about a lot of things, the new stadium, whiteout, NIL. But like most of our conversations, Steve, it always ends up in a similar place where we talk about James Franklin, how he handles the program, his successes, his failures. And it's hard to debate some of the points that you make that I think despite the recruiting advantage that I often point out, or recruiting disadvantage that Penn State has against a team like Ohio State, the point is, though, for a couple of years, he's had comparable talent, whether you want to give him credit for development of the team to match up against Ohio State, I think you somewhat have to, but he's blown leads. He's had double-digit leads in the fourth quarter and lost the game. Or he's had the last couple of years where he's just not been competitive in the two games that count. And I think he's had talent that even if it's didn't come out of high school higher rated, whether just smart recruiting, good development, or the players just turned out better than expected, he should have been more competitive on the field than he's been. But it always leads to the question, all right, well, and let me just address one more thing, because you mentioned Michigan, which I think is the better comparison than Clemson. Dabo Swinney, he did a great job at Clemson because he took a team that wasn't a blue blood and made them that. He also hit on two really good quarterbacks to help them. Now it's interesting, Dabo's not adjusting very well to the new NIL and transfer portal world, and it's costing Clemson. So I think Michigan and what Jim Harbaugh did over the last couple of years, I think what he did was he said, I'm not going to be able to recruit against Ohio State, so I'm going to recruit a certain way. I'm going to get a certain type of player that's going to work for us. That was his formula. And the question is, could James Franklin do it? Or if James Franklin can't, is there actually somebody else out there who could? There's a lot of stories of programs throughout the country who said, yeah, we're very good, but we want to be elite. And guess what? It didn't work for them. So it's the common question that we always end up with in this conversation. If not James Franklin, Steve, then who?
I'm going to be watching Nebraska with great interest to see how Matt Rhule does. I think he would be a logical person given his roots, somebody that could maybe unite some of those divisions we talked about from the Paterno era to the new era. And he had a track record of success in college. I know his pro career didn't translate necessarily as well. Neither did Nick Saban's. So that's something that somebody that I'm particularly keeping an eye on. And look, you mentioned, you know, as the devil, you know, better than the devil you don't. I guess where I'm sort of at right now is after 10 years, I think I have a pretty good body of work to judge Franklin on. And at this point, I don't see a path forward right now for him to take Penn State to the next level. I think he sort of plateaued. Whether it's worth taking a risk on somebody who might be able to break through that, that's something that Pat Kraft and the powers that be there at Penn State need to seriously think about. And, you know, over the next few years, if Penn State doesn't make the playoff, the buyout becomes more reasonable, and maybe if Nebraska is performing better, that's something they ought to consider.
You know, Matt Rhule is a name that often comes up, and it's probably a good name to throw out there. The name that I'll throw out there, and I know it's not for, you know, this year to happen, but I'm a Manny Diaz fan. The way you're watching Matt Rhule in Nebraska, I'm watching Manny Diaz at Duke and want to see how he does there as a head coach.
I agree. I think Diaz was a great hire. I think it's interesting when you look at some of the success that Penn State has had under Franklin, bringing in these former head coaches is really where it's been. You look at Diaz there on the defensive side. That was, I think, a masterful job. I think Tom Allen may be underappreciated. We'll see how he does. It can be tough to judge against that standard that Diaz set, but I think that's good. I also go back to offensively. When's the only time Penn State actually had a good offense? It was when Joe Moorhead. And to me, that suggests from the outside, well, one, there was a rumor that Moorhead was placed there, that Franklin didn't really have his say, that it was sort of understood that we need Moorhead in here with his head coach experience because that was year three. There was a lot of concern about the direction of the program, if they needed to make a change. Had Barkley not broke that run against Minnesota, that may have come sooner as opposed to later. But the idea that the control of the offense was handed over to a former head coach that's not surprising to me to see that was the one time when Penn State had success. Now, look, if you give me Saquon Barkley and Chris Godwin and Mike Gesicki, you know, I might have been able to call a few good plays too. But the fear is after that. You know, Penn State sort of struggled from offensive coordinators since then. And is that, you know, a coincidence? We'll see. Again, I hope Kotelniki works out this year, but maybe if he doesn't, they should go to the head coach model again with more of a signal to get Franklin out of the offensive coordinator scheming and the like, and just sort of hand the reins over to somebody else. Again, I think he's done that on the defensive side. And to me, that's why they've been more successful over the past few years.
Well, the coordinators, you make a good point in the value of them. I'm very bullish on Tom Allen with the defense. Everyone who listens to our show knows I was a big Manny Diaz fan. I was a Manny Diaz fan when he came in, and only more so after seeing his teams play. And the other reason for that is it's been fascinating in talking to the players, not just Landon, but some of the other players. And when I've mentioned Manny Diaz's name, I've had players just light up. And Landon specifically, he has talked about Manny Diaz not just addressing the defense, but addressing the whole team and sounding like a head coach. So I think, you know, there would be, if you choose between Duke and Penn State, you know, obviously Penn State, the bigger, better opportunity. I hope he goes to Duke, succeeds there. And then if the time comes where James Franklin chooses to move on himself or Penn State chooses to make the change, that's the guy I would be rooting for. But I think I know James Franklin has been here, you know, the 10 years. The first couple of years, I don't think he's given enough credit, Steve, for getting Penn State out of the sanctions. There were a lot of people who thought it would take 10 years just to get back to a reasonable program, a 500 program, let alone a 10-team, expect to make a 12-team playoff type of program.
I agree with that. I mean, look, I liked O'Brien. I don't think he was interested in sticking around, which maybe made that deficit even greater for Franklin inheriting it, particularly on the offensive and defensive line. And I think Franklin exceeded expectations in the sense, if you look at 16, what they were able to do. My criticism is squandering 17 and 18 and those opportunities and the hole that he sort of created himself as a result of that. I think that contributes to the decline in some of the recruiting. Is, you know, you had a chance to surpass Ohio State and you didn't. And the gap in terms of the on-field product between Ohio State and Michigan's only growing worse to the point where it's no longer competitive. If you're a big-time recruit, and let's just say money's not your only consideration here, I just think it's tougher to make that sell here at Penn State. And all this constant turnover, particularly when you look at what's going on at the wide receiver position, something that's become much more important going back to when I played in terms of getting the ball to players like that in space. it's hard to argue for a wide receiver right now not to go to one of his other programs, just given the lack of development more recently there and the constant turnover on the coaching side. I mean, you contrast that with what's going on there at Ohio State.
When you look at this, though, with the positions, and I agree with you at the wide receiver position, it's not worked. And sometimes you fall into a little bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's not succeeding. I need to make a change at coach. You change the coach, and then it becomes there's so much turnover. And it's like, how do you break that cycle? And you could see the positions at Penn State where they've done the job, you know, at tight end, at running back. They made a change at offensive line, and it appears to have really improved the offensive line. It took a few years to do it, but Troutwine really has seemed to done well. Deion Barnes on the defensive line seems to be doing really well. And I will give Franklin credit for not being afraid. If he identifies that there's an issue, he'll make a change. He did it at wide receiver. He's done it at offensive coordinator. It's just a question. Okay. A couple years ago, I think everybody was a huge Yurcich fan with that hire. It was a good hire that didn't work out. Now with Kotelniki, we're kind of getting, as you started, let's start, you know, we kind of circle back to where we started. We're kind of in the same position as 2 years ago, that new offensive coordinator coming in, Steve, and the question is, can he do the job? I guess that's the, you know, as we have 2 minutes left here, Andy Kotelniki coming in. Are you excited about that? Are you confident in that? Was that the right hire?
I've lost confidence in Franklin's hiring decisions on the offense coordinator. Again, the only one that I've seen any success with was Moorhead. And my understanding is that was one decision not made by Franklin, but by the powers that be to get him there. I'm a little concerned about sort of a square peg and round hole going back to Franklin's first seasons with Christian Hackenberg. I'm worried that Aller, being a dropback passer, is he really going to be the best fit in that offense, particularly when you're trying to play to your strengths of the two running backs? You're playing with 10 guys as opposed to 11. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Aller's not a legitimate running threat. I don't know that Clifford or even McSorley were compared to some of the guys that were behind them. And that's sort of my fear for Kotelniki is what does that season, what's it going to look like? Is he really a Kotelniki guy, Aller, or was he just a holdover from Yurcich and we're going to have a disappointing year? And as you point out, if you don't make the playoffs this year, there's not a lot of optimism for the next couple of years.
That's a good point. And it's interesting with Drew Aller. Remember, too, he's the first high-end quarterback that Franklin has brought in.
Right. And if he doesn't work out, then is he going to be the last one that comes in?
Conceivably. And that leads to, you know, I've had someone say to me, and it's hard to argue, you know, James Franklin has always liked to have that mobile quarterback. So it's not 10 versus 11. If you have a quarterback who's a threat to run and going the Drew Aller route, he's definitely gone a different route. It'll be interesting to see. Steve, tell you what, this time it goes just way too fast. Thank you so much for filling in.
Thank you for having me on. Go Penn State.
Absolutely. Our pleasure, Steve. Thanks for coming in. T. Frank will be back next week. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining us, listening in. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.